Genomics is fundamentally changing the way we think about health and disease, and driving forward personalized treatment options that would have been pure science fiction just a few years ago. Still, some parts of our genome are more mysterious than others. Garvan researcher Dr. Ara Devison is spearheading cutting-edge DNA sequencing methods to future-proof how genomics will integrate into healthcare. You're listening to Medical Minds, the podcast that takes you inside the labs at the Garvan Institute of Medical Research. I'm your host, Dr. Vivian Richter, and with me here is Dr. Ira Devison, head of the Genomic Technologies Lab at Garvan. Welcome, Ira.
Hi, Viv. Thanks for having me. Really looking forward to our conversation.
Ira, what excited you about genomics enough to make it your career?
Yeah, I guess I've always been interested in the life sciences and, you know, the natural world, and I guess just sort of understanding how things work in the world around you, which really is the goal of science. And I think I was lucky enough to have a couple of really excellent high school science teachers towards the latter stages of my high school who kind of inspired me to take up biology and chemistry at university. And I think somewhere along the line there, during those years, I realized if you want to understand how the world works, how living things work, how they came to be, and how they're changing, you really need to understand the genome, because it is the core program of life that sort of dictates everything. And I guess once I'd realized that, there was never really going to be another path for me. I was always fascinated by it from that point onwards.
And tell us about the first time you stepped into a research lab.
The first time I stepped into a research lab would have been my honours year at the ANU. So during honours, I studied plant science, plant genetics project. So I was embedded in a lab there where we were growing little model organisms called Arabidopsis and fiddling around with their genomes to test things about how their genes operate and switch each other on and off. My project was actually a bit of a left field one where we decided we wanted to clone a human gene into this plant to see if it could still work. It was a left field project, as I said. But we were kind of testing the idea that this gene is, you know, a really ancient gene. Its function has been around for so long that if you take it from a human cell and put it into a plant, it could still perform its function. We did that and it kind of worked. It kind of could still perform its job, but the plant kind of was a bit messed up. It sort of had weird curly leaves and was a bit shrunken and imperfect, I would say. but it was a really fun experience about what you can do in science when you come up with a hypothesis, even if it's a bit left field, and just have a crack at it. Yeah.
What did that tell you about genomics?
I mean, it taught us a lot about this gene. It taught us that the gene is so deeply conserved or so ancient that it could still function in a plant cell. But obviously there'd been, in the intervening hundreds of millions of years, it had changed sufficiently that its job wasn't perfectly executed in a plant cell. It wasn't interacting with all of the things that it would normally interact with in a human cell. So yeah, we learned something about the evolution of that gene, which to me was eye-opening and yeah, a pretty cool experience as a undergraduate.
So you went on to do a PhD. Can you tell us about what you did?
Yeah, so my PhD was in genomics in a pretty broad sense, and it was mostly sort of computational stuff. So I'm a bioinformatician, or I was a bioinformatician, a person who analyzes genomics data sets to learn things about biology. And I say that because it was a very broad PhD. I worked on a lot of different projects, all of them on different subjects, but united by the fact that they involved genomics. Actually, the title of my PhD thesis ended up being three largely unrelated experiments in the era of genomics or something like this, which my supervisors were not very impressed with. But I think the main thrust of what I was doing was turned out to be a biotechnology project where we actually developed a new product, which was called Sequins. These are sort of synthetic genes, so totally artificial molecules that we created that you could actually use as internal controls in your genomics experiments. So the basic idea is you would get these synthetic genes, you'd add them to a DNA sample that you were just about to analyze, like maybe a patient DNA sample, and then you'd do your genomic experiment as you normally would, but you'd have these synthetic molecules in there that act as kind of like an internal truth set or like a known entity within your experiment. And having that in there lets you sort of measure how accurate your experiment is, because you've got this truth set. You can see if you're making any mistakes, and that gives you the ability to sort of do quality control, measure your performance over time, and ideally to optimize your performance so you actually improve the accuracy of your experiment.
So rather than investigating a specific biological problem, you're more focused on developing the technology that sits behind that.
Yeah, I think that's what sort of came out of my PhD was this philosophy that you don't necessarily have to be an expert in one particular disease or one particular biological system, but you can spend your time building tools and methods and get these sort of capabilities, particularly in the data analysis, which is a huge part of genomic science. And once you've got those expertise or once you've built those tools, you can really apply them in many different areas and the applications sort of follow naturally, I guess, usually via collaboration with people who are experts in different disease areas or different areas of biology.
What sort of sequencing do you specialize in?
Yes, my team's called the Genomic Technologies Lab. And we work on lots of different genomic technologies, but it's something that we're really interested in at the moment and over the last couple of years is it's called long-read sequencing. So this is a new class of technologies that are really hitting their stride over the last couple of years. And they're kind of revolutionary because I guess over the last 10 or 20 years in genomics, we've been pretty reliant on a technique called next-generation sequencing or shotgun sequencing. And this is a process where you basically smash the genome up into tiny little fragments that are about 100 base pairs long or 100 letters of the DNA code long. The genome is 3 billion letters and we're smashing it up into these tiny 100 base pair pieces. And then you have to stitch all those together like a jigsaw puzzle to sort of understand what the genome looked like in a given person or a given organism. But now with these new technologies that are coming along, long-read sequencing, you know, it's called long-read because we don't have to smash the genome up into these tiny pieces. We can actually read much longer pieces of the DNA code. So thousands or tens of thousands or even up to millions of letters long in a single continuous piece. And so that basically just means that when you're stitching the genome back together for your patient or for your organism, you're doing a much less complicated jigsaw puzzle. You don't have all these tiny little fragments. You have these long continuous molecules. And so that makes the problem much simpler, much less chance of making mistakes. And it lets you access parts of the genome that are too complicated to stitch together with those small jigsaw pieces.
You're saying this is giving us the most accurate view of our genome?
Yeah, this is giving us the sort of best resolution, I would say, when it comes to reading a genome. And I guess you need to think about the fact that the genome's not a single homogeneous object. It has lots of areas that have specific contexts that make it difficult to read. And the thing that's usually most difficult is a repetitive sequence. And you can imagine if you're doing a jigsaw puzzle, if there's a section of the puzzle that has lots of the same feature being repeated over and over again without any kind of unique features, that's really hard for you to interpret and stitch together correctly. And that's the same in the genome. If we have whole large sections of the genome where you just have the same DNA code repeating itself again and again, you're very likely to make mistakes when you're trying to piece that together and read it out. So there's maybe 10 or 20% of the genome that's like this. It's too repetitive for us to have properly analyzed it in the last 10, 15 years of genomics. But now with these new technologies, we can finally read these sections, these sort of mysterious dark regions of the genome.
And why do we need to know about these regions?
Partly because it's just really interesting and we don't know what's in there. Yeah. And that's what drives us as scientists is driving our knowledge forward, just finding out what these regions look like. But we also know that there's lots of important genes within these regions and there's lots of important genes that have roles in disease where we already know that they have roles in disease, but we haven't been able to properly analyze them because the technologies have not been there. Or we can analyze them maybe to diagnose a genetic disease, but it's really slow and laborious and challenging and error prone. So with these new technologies, we can eliminate a lot of those difficulties, but we can also just shed new light on things that we haven't understood before. An example that we've been working on a lot in the last couple of years, a specific group of disorders called repeat expansion disorders. These are typically neurodegenerative diseases, you know, affecting the nervous system, but they involve lots of different genes. There's at least 50 genes involved and probably many more out there that we haven't yet discovered, but they contain these repetitive sequences that are kind of like repeating syllables within a word. Everybody has these genes, but in certain people, those repetitive sections of the gene actually get blown out in size and they become massively expanded. So you can maybe think about a word like Woolloomooloo, the suburb in Sydney. everyone has a few repetitive syllables in that word, but maybe in your patient, when you read it out, there's is woola, moola, 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 moolu, right? And yeah. it's become massively expanded, and that's the nature of these repetitive sequences, is they're quite unstable. But that actually leads to disease in some cases. And so some very well-known genetic diseases like Huntington's disease is actually caused by these repetitive expansions in a particular gene. So those have been difficult to research and difficult to diagnose until recently, but we're actually now applying these new long-read sequencing technologies that we have to read these out very accurately so that we can tell the difference in the length of these genes between different individuals. And that, we hope, is going to lead to much better, much more streamlined, much more accurate patient diagnoses.
Being able to diagnose these diseases much earlier on would lead to a transformation in patient outcomes.
Yeah, so unfortunately for a lot of these neurodegenerative diseases that we're looking at, there's no current cure, but there are cures on the horizon. There are very promising clinical trials getting underway with things like gene therapies now coming out for different inherited diseases. It's only a matter of time before there will be ways to treat these disorders that are very debilitating. But we really need to be able to diagnose them and work out exactly what a particular patient's specific mutation is or variant is, so that they can be accurately targeted within these trials and when these therapies come online.
Ira, tell us what else you're using this long read sequencing for.
Yeah, so we've spent a lot of time and energy building up our capabilities in this area, long read sequencing. We have a lot of different instruments. And we're really, I'd like to say we've become the sort of leader in Australia in this area. And it means we actually work on all sorts of different genomics projects. So it causes a lot of demand for these instruments and for these capabilities. We started offering a sequencing service, and we collaborate with many different researchers around Australia. So we work on everything from clinical genomics projects, like what I've just described, where we're trying to improve patient diagnoses. We work on cancer research, which is obviously a disease that's driven by genomic events. We work on immunology, because there's a lot of great immunology labs at the Garvan who we collaborate with, who, you know, require genomics capabilities for their work. But we also do some more left field things, like working on non-human biology. So we collaborate with a lot of researchers in plant and animal world who want to sequence a genome for their particular species that they're most interested in, maybe for evolution studies or ecology studies. So we help them build the genomics resources that they need to make their work happen. That's a really interesting and fun side project that we do. But it often teaches us a lot about how the human genome works as well, to understand non-human organisms. In addition to that, we work on often microbes, including viruses, which have obviously been very front and center of the last couple of years. And obviously, you know, all of these things involve DNA. All of them have a genome. And basically in modern science, you need to understand the genome to understand whatever organism you're working on. We've found that there's a huge appetite for these technologies. We obviously put in the hard work to build these capabilities up, but then once we've started offering them to the wider research community in Australia, there's no limit to the people who are showing up with cool projects to work on and really taking advantage of the capabilities that we have at the Garvan Institute.
Speaking of viruses, in 2020, you were approached about a project that had quite a significant impact. Can you tell us about that?
I guess I started my new role as a lab leader at Garvan Institute in, I think it was February 2020, right as the COVID pandemic was just getting underway. And so within about a month of me taking over that role, you know, the world had descended into chaos and we were in lockdowns. And scientifically, it was quite interesting for us, because we had these DNA sequencing technologies that we were working with, that we had really unique expertise in within Australia. And we realized pretty quickly that these could be applied for sequencing the genome of the virus, which is a really useful thing to be able to do, because it allows you to tell what the strain is. And as you know, we all became super familiar with Delta and Omicron and all these sorts mm-hmm. of things. But you know, that's ultimately a genomic classification. You need to sequence the virus's genome to know what strain it is. It also informs contact tracing. So you can, the genome of the virus acts kind of like a fingerprint, and you can work out who passed it on to who. So you can connect these clusters or these outbreaks together, you know, like the Crossroads Hotel and the Thai restaurant in Kings Cross, you know, to yeah. know that they had a common source, you have to be able to sequence the genome of the virus, which provides that fingerprint that I mentioned. So we knew that we had the capabilities to be able to do this. We were generally using these technologies to sequence human genomes, which are much bigger and more complicated. Sequencing a virus is actually not that hard. And so we sort of got in touch with some virology labs and also ended up getting in touch with New South Wales Health Pathology very early on in that outbreak in Australia. And we said, you know, we've got these technologies and we are available to help if you need it. And so that kicked off a fairly long and intense and exciting collaboration with New South Wales Health to look at a workflow to perform this very rapid DNA sequencing on the virus that we would then feed back information to them to inform their contact tracing and strain surveillance.
We're now 4 years on from that time. Tell us about what you're focusing on now.
Yeah, so having built up all of these capabilities in this long-read sequencing technologies that I've mentioned, we've now got the ability to sequence human genomes at scale quite cheaply. And when I say sequence human genomes, because we're using this unique technology, we're fully sequencing them. So we're getting right into these dark, mysterious corners of the genome that I mentioned, these repetitive genes that haven't been able to be read out. And these are very interesting because they're the most dynamic parts of the genome. They're the most diverse parts of the genome. So if you compare the genome of any two human individuals, the places where they're going to be most different are in these dark, repetitive regions. And so this is a disproportionate source of genetic variation or genetic diversity are in these genes. And so what we now want to do is actually scale this up, spread it out to look at diverse human populations around Australia and potentially around the world to study these dynamic regions and start to build up a much clearer picture of how they look across populations. Like, what are the shared features between individuals and between different community groups? And what are the features in these regions that are unique? And ultimately, the goal is to build reference data and the resources that we're going to need to understand these in a medical context so that we can potentially diagnose genetic diseases that involve these genes. To do that, you need a really clear picture of what that normal genetic variation actually looks like, because that's just your normal healthy background level.
What have you found out through that work so far?
So it's early days, but we've just been involved in a very exciting pilot study with the National Centre for Indigenous Genomics in Canberra. It's a long-term study that we're going to be continuing to work on, but the goal of this pilot phase was just to look at the genome sequences of individuals in four Indigenous communities in Northern Australia, so three in the Northern Territory and one in Queensland, and to start to characterise genetic variation in these groups, but specifically focused on these complex repetitive areas of the genome and what we call structural variants. So these are large pieces of DNA that are deleted or inserted or rearranged between different individuals' genome sequences. So big changes that are really often quite relevant and have a big effect on people's genetic code. This is kind of the first time that Indigenous Australian genomes have been studied into this level. And so we obviously characterize a whole lot of unique genetic diversity, a lot of new gene variants that have never been seen before and probably don't occur outside of Australia. So we discover a lot of variation that appears to be unique to Indigenous Australians, much more than you would find in a European person who comes from a population that's been very heavily studied in the past. In addition to showing that these Indigenous communities are genomically very different to people from other parts of the world, we also discovered somewhat surprisingly that these communities are very, very genetically different from one another. So people from two different communities in Northern Territory, separated by a couple of hundred kilometres, shared some genetic variation, but had many, many unique genetic variants that were not found in another community that were specific to that community. They almost look like people from totally separate countries in different corners of the globe, even though they're just separated by a few hundred kilometres in the Northern Territory. So that speaks to how long these people have been living here in this country, in largely isolated pockets of the country, and how unique their genetic variation is.
What does this work mean for Indigenous Australians?
This work tells us a lot about the genetic diversity of Indigenous Australians. They're really rich and unique genetic features. But what's really more important about this, it's the first step towards building the resources we need to be able to diagnose and research genetic disease in a manner that's fit for purpose for these communities. So as I said, we discovered that each community is very different from one another, and that all of them are genetically very different from Europeans or East Asians. And so if we're trying to diagnose an Indigenous person with a potential genetic disease, at the moment we'd be comparing their data to a reference data sets that were built with Europeans, and it's not the right comparison. So you're going to find lots of features in that Indigenous patient's genome that look different or stand out from the crowd if you're using a European backdrop, I guess. And that makes it very hard to diagnose the disease, because those are all going to look like potential places where a gene might be broken or something. But it's actually just a natural feature of the fact that these communities have been living, you know, separate for hundreds of thousands of years potentially. So it's really important that we build that reference data and build that map of what normal healthy genetic variation looks like in the appropriate communities in Australian Indigenous population, and even in the specific communities that a particular patient might come from. Genomics is the future of healthcare, and it's going to become increasingly intertwined and embedded with everything that we do in medicine. That might be 5 years down the track, 10 years down the track, 20 years down the track. But if we don't build the resources now for these communities, they're going to be left behind. And that's just going to be another area in which the health disparities that already exist in this country become wider.
And I understand you have a special family connection with this project.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a crazy coincidence, but these communities that we're working with, and this centre called the National Centre for Indigenous Genomics, was actually started around 10 years ago at the ANU. What prompted this was that a large collection of Indigenous Australian blood samples were found in a minus 80 freezer at the John Curtin School of Medical Research that had been basically collected in sort of the 1960s, 70s, and then housed at the ANU indefinitely, just sort of put on ice because the person looking after them and running the project was no longer around. These samples were discovered, and the National Centre for Indigenous Genomics was set up to basically repatriate them, return them to the communities from where they were collected, but also to prompt dialogue with those communities so that we could then start working with them genomically and come up with projects and engage their leadership for future genomics research. Some of the samples actually ended up being analyzed. Some of these historical samples, you can still get DNA out of them, and you know, with the consent of the communities involved, you can still do genomics research on them. The real crazy coincidence here is these samples were actually collected by my grandfather who was a genetics researcher back many decades ago. He died when I was quite young, so I had no idea he was working on any of this stuff. My mum was sort of vaguely aware, and she was obviously contacted when they were starting this centre and utilising his old lab notebooks and journals and specimens and things. But then just much later on, I was just at a conference, and my colleague from ANU was giving a talk about this new centre, and it's popping up photos of, like, historical photos that my grandfather had taken in the field of him working with these communities. And I was like, oh, that's my grandfather. And he was like, oh, bloody hell. So we better get you involved in the research. And so that was kind of how we struck up the conversation. And yeah, just a bit of a crazy coincidence.
Ira, before we let you get back to your genomic sequencing, it's time for the Fast Five. What do you do in your downtime?
At the moment, I'm doing a lot of long distance running.
Most challenging thing you've ever done?
When I finished university, I rode my bicycle across Europe for about 4,000 kilometres over a couple of months, which was extremely challenging. I wouldn't say it was something I had to do. I did it voluntarily, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, that was pretty difficult.
Any secret skills?
I'm really good at trivia questions about landlocked countries. So if you tell me any country, I can tell you whether it's landlocked, possibly.
Kenya.
Not landlocked. Yeah, 100% sure about that. There's two countries that are doubly landlocked. So they're landlocked by other landlocked countries, Uzbekistan and Liechtenstein. You need to know that one. It comes up on the quiz quite a bit.
Any pets?
Yeah, I got a dog called Tony, short for Rigatoni. He's a Maltese terrier crossed with a toy poodle, so a moodle. And he's a good little boy.
What's the current book you're reading?
I'm reading a book called Paradise Estate by an author called Max Easton. He's a Sydney author. The book's actually about a mouldy share house in Sydney's inner west, which is a topic I'm very familiar with.
Dr. Ira Deveson, thank you so much for joining us on Medical Minds.
Thanks for having me, Viv. It's been really great to speak with you.
If you'd like to know more about Ira's research or donate to the work we do at Garvan, head to garvan.org.au. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and share with other podcast lovers. I'm Dr. Vivian Richter. Thanks for listening. This podcast was recorded on the traditional country of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and community. We pay our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and elders, past, present and emerging.